Addicts clean, are you listening? Sober drunks, noses glistening. A beautiful show, we're right here, you know. Recovery 101, a wonderland. Gone away is the old life. Here to stay is the new life. We do a fun show, we're right here, you know. Recovery 101, a wonderland. In the meta, we can build a program and pretend that it's from Jimmy K. He'll say, are you sober? We'll say, no, man. But Bill can do the job the AA way. When we're clean, ain't it thrilling? Sober drunks are a-chillin'. We'll frolic and play the recovery way. Recovery 101, a wonderland. Recovery 101, a wonderland.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you to Shelley and Bruce for the Recovery 101, a wonderland jingle. Come on. You know, Ken hasn't heard it, but that's where we changed the words to winter wonderland.
I kind of figured that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't take a lot of brain power there.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. Come on now.
I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult, Shelley.
Recovery 101, Wonderland. By the way, wow, I look like I'm...
We have to pay for the way?
What, do we have to pay for what?
For the way? You say, by the way, we got to pay for it?
By the way. Yeah, you got to buy it. By the way. So... what do we got coming up here, Shelley? What's happening down the road here?
Homelessness and death.
Besides, well, death and taxes are the only two things you can really rely on.
And I stopped paying taxes 13 years ago.
Do we really want to put that on the air?
Wait, don't. haven't you ever heard those things where guys say they're like, you know, they just stopped paying taxes and like they went to court and it turned out they'd, for whatever defense they use, they didn't have to pay taxes. I'm like, why aren't we all doing that? Oh, by the way, Recovery 101 does not speak for AANAOACAGAPASLASLAACRRRMMMM. Yeah. DRAHAFA or any of them there, guys. We don't speak for the Anons either. We don't speak that very well for ourselves, as you're about
that
to find
very
out.
Well, no, you don't.
No. Look, come on now. Now, Shelley. Oh, wait. Never mind. I'm effing up. My name, welcome to Recovery 101. My name is Bruce B., as always, with
Shelley
and Ken.
Special guest host Ken is back due to popular demand. The many, many comments we received on the last show crying for your return.
Were there three?
Or no, there were people. There was people crying, all right. Like, oh, my God, where's Mark?
Oh, no, that they really, no, probably.
So... normally we would banter. We bantered a little bit, but I have a thing for you guys.
Oh, God, what?
So, we're coming up here on Christmas, of course. And what I wanted to do is I have a list. And now, this is a particular website's list. So, this isn't the end-all, be-all. But it's the top 10 Christmas movies.
Top 10 Christmas movies.
So, throw out a couple of your favorite Christmas movies of all time. We'll see if they made the top 10.
A Christmas Story.
Yes, Christmas Story. And Die Hard.
Wait, hang on.
Die Hard, I love Die Hard. You know Lethal Weapon, the first one was also a Christmas movie?
Yes, a Christmas Story comes in at number 3.
Okay.
Die Hard was not on this particular list yet. It was on other lists.
Okay.
There was other lists that had Die Hard. There was actually a number of... if you look at, like, the top 50, there are crazy, crazy... there's, like, Silent Night, Deadly Night. I mean, there's, like, all kinds of
Krampus.
Weird...
that movie was so stupid.
Okay. Think of
Charlie Brown Christmas.
Actually, not on this list.
Because it's not a movie. It's a TV
show. It's a TV show.
I would say Scrooged, because I like Scrooged.
Scrooged came in at number 6.
It's a Wonderful Life?
Wonderful Life came in at number 1.
Really?
Yes. Oh, wait. Yes. Number one. Movie. It's a Wonderful Life.
I cannot stand that movie.
What is it called?
Christmas Vacation is on there, I'm sure.
Christmas Vacation in number two.
I just saw that the other day, too.
Beating out.
Christmas Story is my favorite. My favorite Christmassy kind of movie.
It can be. You're going to tell me that National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is not a Christmassy movie?
It's not my favorite. I said A Christmas Story is my favorite.
But it came in higher than A Christmas Story.
I love
but
the Bumpuses.
Not as high as...
The Bumpuses' dogs.
It's a Wonderful Life.
That's the best part. Malafinga! When the Bumpuses' dogs come... All 47 of Bumpuses' smelly dogs came through the kitchen.
Okay, so let me round out these other ones. Number 10, The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, jeez. Oh, I have that almost memorized because my son went through a period where for like 9 months where we had to watch it every day.
Home Alone.
Did not make this list.
Are you kidding?
Because I
did
hate
not
that
make
movie.
This list, but it was in other lists. It was in other lists for sure. Number 9. I don't even think I saw it, actually. Bad Santa.
Oh, I love that movie.
Number 8.
I didn't see it.
Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay.
The original.
Nope, not my favorite.
Number 7, Nightmare Before Christmas. Tim Burton. 6 was Scrooge. Oh, wait. I was wrong. Home Alone. Number 5. Home Alone. Number 4, Holiday Inn.
Holiday Inn's pretty good.
A Christmas Carol's not on there?
Number 3, A Christmas Story. Number 2, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Number 1, It's a Wonderful Life. So that rounded out your top 10, at least from
this. Where did
this
list come from?
This is from Esquire magazine. Elf came in at number 13. Meet Me in St. Louis, 14. Best Man Holiday, number 15. Eyes Wide Shut.
That's not a Christmas movie.
Black Christmas. A Christmas Tale, which is definitely a newer one. A Shop Around the Corner made a lot of lists. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it, but it looks like it's from probably the 40s. Jimmy Stewart, Margaret Sullivan.
Yeah.
Gremlins.
Okay.
Made the top 20.
It's not a Christmas movie, is it?
On this one, Die Hard was number 22.
He gives them the Mugwai for Christmas.
Number 23, A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas.
Sweet.
Dude.
Number 24, Edward Scissorhands. 25, Silent Night, Deadly Night. And it's got Santa with an axe. Metropolitan, which I don't recognize. Love Actually. The Holiday. Happy Christmas. Now we're in the... And number 30, Batman Returns.
What?
Hey, look. I'm just...
Oh, yeah. Batman Returns was at Christmas there. Time. It was at Christmas time.
And so is Die Hard. I mean, you know. Hey. So, you know what that means?
Oh, crap.
You do and you'll clean it up.
Oh!
Ba-dum-bum-tsh. It's time for the boozy news and the news not fit for booze.
Not bad.
I'm telling you, Kenny's ripping it up.
Sorry, Mark. You're going to be out of a job. Okay, we have shout-outs, too.
Yeah, and it pays so highly.
I know. Well, hey, tonight it paid in lemon cookies.
That's true.
And they're very delicious, too.
They're pretty damn good.
We have shout-outs to Lisa, Lee, John, Joey, James, Johnny, Mitch, Susan, Dan, Alexandria, Hudie, Jack, Randy, Roger, Dave, Stryker, Jane Lynn, Fran, Bill, Yvette, and Curtis.
Yes. Pretty soon, we're going
to
be like...
What? Special shout-out to Marie, because I know she listens occasionally, and we never give her a shout-out.
True. You know what's going to happen one of these days. I'm going to say, it's time for the booze, and Shelly's going to do the list of shout-outs, and at the end we'll be like, and that's all the time we have for the boozy news.
We keep threatening that, but it never happens. I'll just learn
it
to talk
could.
Faster.
The list keeps getting
faster,
longer
faster.
And longer.
Okay, now I have to scroll down to the right story. La, 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 talk amongst yourselves.
La, 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 la.
I
no,
want to hear more about one. Naked people.
Naked people. well, this isn't a naked person, but I guess the person was in their birthday suit. This was in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Thank you.
Is this from Fran?
No.
Oh, well, you never know. Fran tends to send in
Florida
she's
stuff.
She's from Tennessee. Almost everything she sends in is from Florida.
The owner of a store, and I'm trying to find this, it's been a few days since I got this, Fort Walton Beach Liquor Store. The owner of the store said he'd never had a break-in of this variety before. A possum broke into his liquor store, picked the lock on the door, broke into the liquor store.
Wait. A possum.
Picked the lock.
Do you know how stupid possums are?
Or somehow got the door open. Somehow the door got scratched open.
Let me tell you what.
Or they broke open a window.
The possum,
they're not sure.
The possum, his buddy, the raccoon, picked the lock.
It's possible, but the raccoon was not caught and the opossum was.
Well, that's because raccoons are smart.
At any rate, several bottles of bourbon were consumed during the night, and the possum was found on the floor of the liquor store.
Dead.
Disoriented, panting, and pale, and salivating with froth coming out of its mouth.
Bring back any memories, Bruce?
Yeah, it does.
That was sounding like a good Friday night for most of us. They turned the possum over to the Emerald Coast Wildlife Refuge, who pumped it full of fluids and monitored it for about 8 hours until it sobered up. And while it was in the process of sobering up, it attempted to get away several times and would, go a few steps and then fall over and start drooling again.
Bring back any memories, Bruce?
Yeah, it really does. Really does.
I'm thinking, I could probably find 5 places in Covina where I could watch that happening right now.
Wow. I still don't buy it that the opossum picked the lock.
The opossum broke into the store. It wasn't exactly clear. It was just said that they broke in through a door or window. So I don't know.
I think that it was some alcoholic that picked the lock. He drank most of the bottles, liquored up the opossum a little bit, and then left and blamed everything on the opossum. That guy's a smart dude right there.
It's possible. But we did have we had raccoons breaking into the church, into Doherty Hall at our church.
Oh, really?
And we only knew because of the footprints that were all the dusty footprints everywhere and couldn't figure out how they were getting in. They figured out how to open the locks on the windows on the kitchen. And they were coming in. They were climbing in through a top window and right over the vent over the stove.
When I was a kid, we went to this place called Cedar Lake, my aunt and uncle and me and some other people. And partway into the night, we look over on my cousin's sleeping bag, and I didn't realize how big, I never met a raccoon in real life, how big a raccoon can be.
Oh, yeah.
This thing looked like a pretty good-sized dog sitting on the end of this sleeping bag. And everyone's like, oh! So we all go zipping off to our places, and you looked, and from the fire, you could see hundreds of shit. So everyone's going and climbing into cars and everything. These things came in and we had all these Shasta sodas. You know what they really like? Cream soda.
Yeah.
They really like cream. Like they'd punch a hole. They'd just pop it open. Punch a hole in a cola and they'd start, they'd leave that alone. They open the old can of saltines, open it up. Really did a good job of opening the package because we're sitting there watching them. They opened the package. They poured all the saltines out. They all started eating them. It was like the weirdest thing ever. Was crazy.
Sounds like a group of my friends.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a story in here in my list that I'm not sure we may have done before, but the Chinese guy that repainted the freeway signs.
I do not recall that.
Okay.
It sounds like a barrel of monkeys, though. What did he do?
28-year-old man named Kai in China was tired of sitting in traffic. And there was one part of his commute where there were two left turn lanes. So he repainted one of the left turn lanes to go straight so that more people would be going straight to shorten his commute.
Smart guy.
Well, it would have been smart except for he was caught on closed circuit TV and slapped with a $200 what equates to a $200 fine.
I was going to say, that sounds like a pretty minimum fine for that. You can get a more than $200 fine tagging.
Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine the accidents that would have ensued? I mean, with the kind of traffic and, you know, in the metropolitan areas in China is pretty intense. Yeah, well, okay, I'm not sure why I put that in there, but for some reason I thought we'd already done it. Well, anyway, in Devon, England, Sonia McCall was left homeless.
In the Uck.
In the Uck, yes. Sonia McCall was left homeless when thieves stole her home.
What kind of trailer was it?
It was a 40-foot, 30,000 dollar pound, you know, money caravan. It's basically the equivalent of an American double wide.
Okay.
They just hooked it up and drove away.
They put it on a truck and took it away. And while she was out, and
it's a good thing she was out. Can you imagine? You're sleeping, you wake up, you're in a new town. You're like, what happened?
She believes that she was retaliated. The police are actually looking into it, not just because somebody stole her house with everything in it, but because this was probably in retaliation by a what do they call it? Like a union of mobile home park owners.
What?
Because they were blocking, they were preventing some owners from selling their homes and promoting other people. Like if you paid them,
you think your homeowners association is bad?
Really bad homeowners association. So she was going to, she was having she had the help of a lawyer. I'm having a hard time talking right now. To help her create or change the law that governs mobile home sales to prevent this kind of unscrupulous favoritism. And she was getting death threats and bomb threats and stuff. And then she went out to the laundromat and came back.
And her stuff was
gone. A few hours later, her whole house was gone.
And you know, a double wide.
They're not small.
I would think that would take quite the hookup. It was a plan.
What I don't get is why no one saw anything.
Come on. In a trailer park? Are you kidding? If you go to move out a double wide, that's what I'm saying. It's like premeditated to the degree. You got to have whatever kind of truck it is. And it's, you know, that would be a big thing. There's going to be people directing traffic, trying to pull that thing out. There's no way.
And they're intimidating
that no one
the
didn't
other
see
people
that.
In the park to get them to not say anything to the police.
Yeah.
Canada is testing.
There's a mouse in my beer, eh?
Canada is testing in some areas of the province of Ontario. They are testing a basic income to see whether or not that might be a viable solution to a burgeoning
homelessness
crisis. Because people, you know, and it's like this in the U.S. as well. There is not one state in the union where you can work a minimum wage 40-hour a week job and put a roof over your head. Not one.
Right, because usually minimum wage jobs are for kids when they get out of high school and they're still living at their parents' house.
You are still stuck in 1972. That's not the way the world works anymore. And people are having to work 2, 3, 4 jobs because employers won't pay more than minimum wage until you get to the level where you've been working there 10 years or you've been promoted 70 million times. And they're not all like fast food jobs or retail jobs. You're talking about jobs like when I started at the library, that's considered a white-collar job. I was a library tech. I had an education. I had training. And I still started at minimum wage and didn't get into the upper end of that pay scale, which was like between $18 and $20 an hour, until I'd been there for 7 years.
I know you can get a call center job that starts at 15.
You still, even in California, you cannot, because the minimum wage that you need to make in California.
But call center jobs are for like teenagers.
Or people
you're
in
not
India.
Getting it. You're not getting it. The reason why a lot of teenagers don't have jobs is because there are too many adults that need them. There aren't enough jobs. We've lost too many jobs in this country for people to be able to give those jobs to teenagers. They can't. And
okay.
You need the minimum wage you need to get to put a roof over your head if you're a single person in California is $16.12 an hour.
I don't think you could put a roof over your head for $16 an hour here.
Not in Covina.
I mean, in California in general. I mean, you'd have to be out in the, maybe out in
you know, Apple Valley or Palmdale or
minimum,
something.
That's the minimum. That's
or Pomona.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know what? Depending on how you look at it, right? If I need to put a roof over my head and I'm single, I can rent a room from someone for $500 a month. That's clearly available. I mean, we see it all the time. There's
not in Covina.
Yeah, there is.
No.
Yeah.
No. Average in Covina is $600 to $700.
Okay. I know people that are renting rooms for $500. I know people that are renting rooms for five. I know people in the program that are renting rooms for $500. I'm just saying, you know, $500 a month, you could get by on not making a lot to if you only have to spend $500 a month.
Anyway.
Because my thing always used to be, let's say I go to work for Walmart, right? And I'm an adult, and I have no money, right? So it's like I got to go get a job. If I go to work at Walmart, you can be damn sure that I am looking to move as quickly as possible into supervisor and management. Because otherwise, you're not going to get it. When I was a kid, the people that worked at Carl's Jr. were all teenagers. Except the leads, well, and some of the leads were teenagers, but the assistant managers and managers actually made good money. In-N-Out, a store manager at In-N-Out, six-figure.
Oh, yeah.
$100,000 running a hamburger place, man. It's like, damn.
Yeah, but now if you look at a lot of those fast food places, the employees are all adults well into their 30s and 40s because there are not the kind of jobs that used to be available to adults are no longer available. Service industry jobs.
Like
they're
what?
Not there. There, I read an article not too long ago that had this ginormously long list of jobs that don't exist anymore. I'd have to find the article again. I'm sure you can Google
newspaper
it.
Printer.
But a lot of it has to do with automation. If you had a factory that employed 50 people 20 years ago, it employs 20 now. Because of automation.
I could see that. Yeah,
so
I could see that.
All of those people that worked in the factory that made a fairly decent wage now have to find other jobs.
You know what they should be doing? They should be guys that service automated systems.
Well, at any rate, Canada is currently, the province of Ontario in Canada is currently testing whether the basic income would be something that might help to prevent homelessness and people ending up in shelters, which in Canada is a serious freaking problem when it's negative 24, let me tell you.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's too early to tell, to have clear results yet. However, the preliminary finding of this is that it is helping a number of the people that are on the program. You have to qualify. Right now, they're only taking qualifiers. If they end up doing this across the board, any Canadian would be eligible to get a basic income.
From the state?
From the government.
Or from the
to get a basic income below a certain income, like what if you have a job and your income level is a certain level. So, but like, say I was making, you know, say I made $30,000 in Canada, I would be eligible for a basic income on top of that. It's a supplement to your income. And then
People
that can't work at all would get their disability plus their basic income.
So it's like welfare, but on a much grander scale.
It's like the most intense level of Social Security that you could possibly imagine.
Did they say about where they're getting the money to do this?
Well, apparently they've found it in their tax base somewhere. And, you know, interestingly enough, Aldous Huxley wrote, you know, Brave New World. And that book goes on a long tangent. And it's actually quite boring part of the book about the concept of basic income. So this is not a new idea. This is, you know, this book was written quite a while ago. I think it was Brave New World. Was it Brave New World? I have to look that up. But I think it was Brave New World.
If she says it was in a book, I believe her.
And the way he described how a basic income system would work made a lot of sense in the book. But as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, yeah, but that's not real world economics. But now Canada is actually trying it. So now we get to see in real time whether or not it actually will work.
Okay.
And the basic premise is people that want to work pay into the system at a certain rate. They're not overtaxed. And then people that can't work or are underemployed would take from the system at a certain rate, but not too much. And it balanced out somehow. So we'll have to see. I think it's something worth keeping an eye on.
Is this going to be one of those things you're going to be like, I'm going to make more money, so they're going to take more of my money and give it to someone else. And now I'm going to be like, now we both have less money.
Interestingly enough, there are the city of Oakland, the state of Hawaii, and the Dutch city of Utrecht and Finland are also trialing basic income. So if you live in Oakland or Hawaii in the U.S., and they desperately need something like that in Hawaii. The homelessness, we talk about the homeless problem in California as it's exploding right now.
Oh, it's huge in Hawaii.
Hawaii is out of control. I mean, out of control.
Oh, yeah. Warren, my friend Warren used to tell me he was from Hawaii. And he goes, the only thing that's good about, because he was homeless in Hawaii for a while. He goes, the only thing that's good about being homeless in Hawaii is, he goes, these guys don't look any different than most of the people you see that are lounging on the beach. He goes, you go to Waikiki. He goes, 20% of those people out there on the beach are probably homeless. And he goes, but they just look like they're tourists. And he goes, man.
Oh, my God, off on a big tangent there. Sorry, that was my fault. A fire broke out Thursday in the neighborhood of Cohoes, New York.
Cohoes?
Cohoes.
That means there's two of them.
There's two hoes, Cohoes. They work together.
Which corner of New York is this? At Cohoes.
The fire began when a man wanted to try to bend metal with fire in a barrel. He did this in front of his apartment complex.
Metal will bend in a fire eventually.
Well, he did this in front of his apartment complex. And
how much of the apartment complex did he burn down?
On a very windy day.
Oh, shit.
And the extreme wind conditions caused the fire to spread for several blocks.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow.
The fire damaged 32 buildings and displaced 18 people.
Sweet.
Well,
how
that
damaged 32 buildings? Well, some of them had to be retail then.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he was trying to imitate a stunt he saw on the television show Forged in Fire.
Dumb
oh
guy.
Yeah, those guys. They like make
yes
weapons.
But I have to think that this is one of those moments that's like the New York equivalent of Here, Hold My Beer in the South, where they just light their own asses on fire. This guy at least saw something on television and wanted to imitate it and was like thinking about it. Wasn't just one of those spur-of-the-moment things. He had to plan this idiocy out.
It's the greatest thing, you know, before every redneck fail video, it's like, here, hold my beer. The greatest thing ever is when you watch fail videos, I don't know how many of these people are alcoholics, but there is a shocking amount of people that will fall over, they sit on the hood of a car and they slide off or something, that do not drop their beers or spill their beers. Beer always seems to stay upright.
Broken arms, broken
legs. And I'm like,
yes.
And I'm like,
the beer survives.
And I'm like, I don't know if that's a fail, man. I'm thinking that's a win. That guy went all the way down to the ground, broke both his legs, broke his wrist, and he still got the beer.
If you knew how many times I fell down the back steps out of the house with
oh, yeah.
a glass of vodka or wine in my hand, and I was like, save the drink. Yes.
I imagine, yes.
Okay, and finally this. And you know how there's always some part of a woman's body that people think is weird, and then it becomes a trend to try to minimize it or maximize it or whatever. For a while, it was the thigh gap, that girls were measuring how much space there was between the tops of their thighs.
Okay.
And the cleavage, I forget what they called it, like how many inches of cleavage you had and all this. Well, there's a new one.
And I have 0 inches of cleavage.
And at this point,
my moobs have not developed yet.
At this point, I have to say they're nuts and they need to shut the hell up.
So what's wrong with our nuts?
The new trend is the armpit vagina. No one wants an armpit vagina. Apparently, having an armpit vagina is a very bad thing.
What the hell is an armpit vagina?
I had to look this up because I'm like, what the heck are they talking about? The armpit vagina is when you're wearing a tank top or some other top where you have your shoulders bare and they can see, like, when your arm is down, the line between your arm and your armpit. If you're wearing a garment that pushes it in a certain way, or you're a little overweight, or there's something, it looks as though there's a vagina in your armpit in close-up pictures.
Is there a little man in a boat?
No, there's no little man in a boat. But you'd have to, if you Google armpit vagina, the pictures that come
up. Oh, you know I'm going to.
Will be of celebrities wearing like strapless dresses.
Uh huh.
with their arms down. And if you see, like, the smart celebrities, when they have to take pictures on the red carpet now, because they want to avoid the dreaded
they
armpit
put their
vagina,
arm out
they
or
put
something?
Their arms up on their hips so that it stretches that thing out. I'm like, really? We are that hyper critical
well,
of ourselves
let me
that we're
tell
worried
you.
About armpit vaginas?
And let me tell
this
you,
is
Kenny,
a thing.
You're a man. I'm a man. We look at women all the time.
That's
are
the
you
thing
ever I'm... looking at their armpit?
That's the last thing I'm looking at.
I'm thinking the same thing. I think women are like too overly hypercritical about
yes.
themselves.
My top three things are butt, boobs, and legs.
Mine is Shelly, Shelly, and Shelly.
Oh, he's going for the points there.
Nice try, Bruce.
Actually, mine originally, like back in the day when I'd be out hunting, shall we say, first thing I would almost always notice from distance would be hair.
I had no hair when we met.
I wasn't talking about you. I said back when I was hunting, like when I was hunting, like when I was a rocker. Because in the 80s, it was big hair, so you could see hair
true.
From a long way away.
That's true.
Then it was butt and legs. Yeah.
I would have to say that mine are boobs and butt, because I look at both. And that was how I got Bruce, because...
Did
he
you
used
notice
to wear
his boobs?
No, his butt. He used to wear these cowboy boots, and he just had this perfect boot walk and this cute butt. And that was what sucked me in at first.
My butt sucked her in. That just sounds wrong on more than one level. It's exit only. I'm just saying.
And that, my excellent friends, is the end of the boozy news.
Those are perfect dudes.
Hey, I'm Dr. Drew, and you are listening to Recovery 101.
Okay, we're back.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
That was not a very good Santa.
No.
But it's the Christmas show. Dun, 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 dun. She gave me the hairy eyeball. I don't want a lot for Christmas.
Half
that
of the show
is
just sitting here waiting for him
I
to stop
need.
Singing.
So, Shelly.
What?
Tell me your favorite Christmas memory of all time.
Well, there are several of all time. It'd be hard to put a...
Okay, then pick several.
My favorite Christmas as a kid was the year my mom gave me a telescope and a copy of Carl Sagan's book, Cosmos.
A book. Imagine that. Shelly,
and a telescope.
Shelly excited about a book.
And I spent the entire winter out in the front lawn with this telescope looking at the moon and stuff. And that was an awesome Christmas. My mom probably liked it, too, because then it got me out of the house and out from underfoot. So, you know.
Well, yeah, okay.
She didn't have to see me for 4 months.
So let's break them up by eras, then. So that's your favorite childhood one.
Right. That's my favorite
Kenny, childhood. What was your favorite? What's your favorite Christmas memory from childhood?
From childhood? This is going to sound kind of weird, but it was the first Christmas after my father left. And... there was four of us kids. My oldest brother was 10. I was 5. My other brother was 8. And my sister was 6. And we lived in East L.A. And every year by our house, the train tracks ran through. And they would come with the Christmas trees for the lots in the area. And we went down to the tracks one year to pick out a Christmas tree. And the tree that me and my brothers decided we wanted was... 12 feet tall. And it was very expensive for us at the time because this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
And the guy on the train car told us, check this out. If you guys can catch this tree when we toss it out to you, you guys can have it free. So,
three dead kids on the ground.
So picture these four little kids standing there with their arms extended.
For a 12-foot tree.
And this guy threw this tree out, and we caught it, and it did not touch the ground.
Wow.
and we loaded it up on the station wagon, got it home, and there was like a 3-foot band on the top of the tree.
Clark Griswold.
But it was just the amazing fact that we did this together as children, and we got the Christmas tree that we wanted, no matter how huge this thing was. And it was the best Christmas as a kid because we did this all together as a family.
Ah, that's awesome. I think my favorite Christmas was, it was like about the time of Apollo 11. And, wait, 11 or 13, which one was this? 11 went to the moon, right?
Yes.
Saturn V. So I wanted this Revell model of the Saturn V, which I knew there was no way I was going to get, because for a model, this thing ended up being 3.5 feet tall. And, you know, the year before, I think I got the model of the battleship Arizona, and it was like $2 and something. But the Saturn V thing was, you know, for me at that time, we're drinking powdered milk like from the last show. And it's like to get a model like that was never going to happen. And it was one of those things. My family has this big thing about, yeah, everyone gets you, you get your big present. And then, but there's like another big present somewhere, you know. So they go, oh, that was the big present. And then you go, and then, you know, my dad's like, oh, what's this over behind the couch? And it was a good-sized box, and I was looking at it, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's got to be for my brother. It's got to be for my brother. It says Bruce on it, from Santa. And I'm like, really? From Santa? And I go, and I ripped it open, and it was the Saturn V rocket. I was like, yeah, it was, like, incredible. Now, Shelley, how about, what was your worst Christmas experience from when you were young? Or did you ever have a bad Christmas experience when you were young?
Yeah, of course we did. I would have to say, well, it was kind of the worst and good at the same time, was the Christmas my sister almost set my grandma's house on fire.
that's awesome.
Leslie was, she was young, six, seven, something like that. So I would have been about 13. And the kids, the three of us, my brother and sister and I, were sitting out in the living room, and there was something on the TV. I forget what it was. And my mom and my grandma and my granny were all in the kitchen. And we were sitting out there, and I don't know what made my sister do this, but she went in the kitchen and got some paper towels and came out and held them over the candles that my grandma had burning on the table. And I didn't see it happening until I realized there was this whoosh of fire behind me. And I was like,
you felt the heat?
I'm screaming, fire, fire. My grandma and my mom come running out, and they put out the Leslie's conflagration. But then everybody was pissed off and upset. So we were all tiptoeing around, like, you know, because the kids are in trouble, which I didn't even do anything. I don't know why I was in trouble. But later that evening, my grandma let me play dominoes with them after dinner. And she started talking to me like a real adult, like a human. Like having a conversation with me about like what was going on in the world. And I actually
had a conversation with you like an adult. She said, quit sandbagging, motherfucker.
And she asked me some questions. I don't even remember what it was exactly we were talking about. But what I do remember is that she would ask me a question and she listened to the answer. And she would say, really, you think so? Why? And she wanted to know. And that kind of attention and respect that was the first time I'd ever gotten that from an adult, really, in my life that I remember. I mean, my mother probably did, but I, you know, my mom and I were at odds for a long time. So, but I remember that. So it was bad and good.
How about a not so spectacular Christmas memory?
Oh, that would be when I was in the fifth grade. I was part of the Christmas program for my school. And
this is already good.
Those are always disasters.
Well, actually, no, the Christmas program went off without a hitch.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And I had a solo. And
sweet.
My mom and my dad and my six brothers and sisters were supposed to be there in the audience to watch me perform my solo. And when the lights hit me and I looked down into the seats where they were supposed to be sitting, there was nobody there.
And, oh, no.
And I got stage fright so bad because I was upset that I couldn't perform.
Oh.
And I choked.
Wow.
Oh. No, I'm so sorry.
Just like the first time you were with a girl.
Yeah, but there was people
Thanks,
watching then.
Oh.
Oh. Burn.
Ba-dum-bum.
I think
actually though, the Christmas performance thing, when I was 6 or 7, I was still doing nefarious things with the contents of my nose at that time. And my mother almost left me at the school because I did it on stage in the middle of the little Christmas carol thing with all the kids. And she didn't want to admit I was her kid.
I have two quick ones. One is when I don't know how old I was, but that Christmas, it was insanely raining. I mean, like, Citrus Avenue over there literally looked like a river. I mean, like, it was raining hard, and it had been raining hard for a couple days, and water was up over the curbs, and we used to wait till Christmas Eve to get a tree, and we did that. Back to the powdered milk days, we did that, kind of like you were talking about, because we didn't have money to get a tree. So we'd go out like Christmas Eve, and my dad would always get a tree for like $1, $2, $3. And we went, and we're driving this Volvo and totally stalled out in the middle of Citrus, like in the middle. And, you know, when we got out of the car, literally there was, I mean, the water was up higher than the door. So we opened it up.
Oh, wow.
So everything's getting wet. And this guy, all these guys are, you should have seen the great story of Christmas spirit, though. These people literally got out of their cars and, you know, in you know, like halfway up your calf water, were helping push the car out of the way. And the other one was when I was a little bit older and I peeked. I went and I peeked. I knew where the Christmas gifts were stashed, and I went and peeked. And it was the worst Christmas ever because I knew what I was getting. And there was no surprise to anything. I don't know. I was just bummed. I was bummed. Now, Shelley remembers when we were all, when she was with me, we were at my parents' house for Christmas Eve. And my mom used to drink. She quit cold turkey, never drank again to this day. And my brother used to drink. And Shelley, you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, of course.
So, say what happened.
I heard the phrase, "Oh, time to go." And I was completely bewildered. We just all got in the car and left.
We're in there, right? And my brother was always like a happy drunk up until that point when the flip switched, the switch flipped. And in the middle, we're decorating the tree and all this, and I hear my brother turns and looks at my mother and goes, "What did you say?" And I go, "Oh, time to go." And Shelly's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Time to go, right now. It's time to go." And she's like, "Why are we leaving?" And I'm like, "Because shit's about to get real at my house."
He's got his hand on the, and the kids are just, okay, la la la, they're skipping out of the house. They're not really thinking about everything. And I'm like, "What the hell's going on?" And he's like shoving me, got a hand on the back, my small of my back, pushing me out the door. And your dad was actually saying, "Okay, good night," like, because he knew.
Oh, yeah, he knew. He knew. So, okay, so now, Shelly, we travel on, say, to your, you know, your late teens through 30 or something like that, like your middle, like maybe so just, you're out on your own or whatever.
Just to be clear, though, we're not actually going to have any recovery in this show. It's just Christmas.
Well, there could be some recovery in here. I don't think you were in recovery in your teens.
I know, but I'm just wondering if we're going to talk about recovery on our recovery show.
No, I was in recovery in my before 30.
In your before 30?
In my before 30. 29.
What was the question?
So it's something a little bit later in life, not, you know, like maybe you're at college already or something like that, you know, between like the late teens and say 30 or so. Maybe you're off, you're married your first time.
No, that was
first time.
Oh, apparently
yes, he's door number 2. I'm door number 3 for him.
Oh, yeah.
I locked
Third
that
time's
door.
A charm.
Kenny's over there nailing it shut. I don't know. I mean, in my teens, I think I spent most of my teenage years during family holidays guesstimating how many hours it would be until I could sneak out to go meet my friends and smoke cigarettes. I mean,
that's your good memory? Sneaking out to smoke cigarettes.
Pretty much. There was actually a really fun Christmas when I was at UCLA. I think I was a sophomore, and the entire family, they were about to move back to Cincinnati, and they were leaving me. They were abandoning me in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but at UCLA, so, I mean, if you're going to get abandoned, that's a pretty good place to get abandoned.
Yeah, but it was a year later when I was truly, truly abandoned.
Right.
Yeah, and it caused a huge schism in the family. But that Christmas, my mom arranged for everybody to meet. We met at Disneyland for the day.
Oh,
and
cool.
She had made me a UCLA sweatsuit. It was a sweatshirt and sweatpants that were yellow or gold. And she put little bears on them, little applique bears with blue bows on them. And she thought it was a really cute outfit. And obviously I did too because I wore it. And when she saw me running toward the family, waving my hands, she told me never to wear it again because she realized that I looked like Big Bird.
Nice.
I loved that sweatsuit. I loved it.
How about you, Kenny?
Teen years would be when my girlfriend at the time, her family took us all to Hawaii for Christmas.
Ooh, shiznits.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, that was a really nice trip. And then a little bit later on in life was the first Christmas after my second daughter was born. Because both sides, I was married at the time, both sides of the family got together. And we literally had over 50 people in our house.
Oh, my God.
And it was just...
Party!
Because... I come from a large Mexican family, and my ex-wife, her family's Puerto Rican, so they have a very large family also, an extended family. So when we all got together at our house, it was our first Christmas in our home. It was just amazing because there was just so many people there. And just put it this way, this room could not hold the amount of gifts that were in our house.
Oh, my God.
It was like... stacked 5 feet high. There was probably about 300 to 400 gifts in this house.
Wow.
We started opening gifts on Christmas Eve at 9 o'clock and we did not finish till after 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
It took that long to open all the gifts. But it was amazing. It just was great.
I think although this is this is one of those kind of good, kind of bad things at the same time, but it was the Covina Christmas Parade when I was 16.
I used to love
it. I had never smoked weed. All my friends smoked weed. They would pass around the bong, and I would take it and considerately pass it to the next guy because I didn't smoke. And one time the bong came around to me, and I said, I'm going to smoke. So I hit it, and we're smoking Thai stick, you know.
Oh, sweet.
And so my first hit of weed is Thai stick. And I hit this, and everyone's looking like, oh, my God. So, you know, I'm thinking I don't feel anything. But, of course, you know, we walk down to the Covina Christmas Parade. The first person I walk directly into is my friend David's dad. And I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, Mr. Larson? He looks at me and goes, Bruce, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine, man. I just really need something to eat, man. So it was kind of cool, but kind of bad at the same time. How about in your sobriety life? Good Christmas memory from your sobriety life.
Well, there have been several. There was the Christmas at Charter Oak. That I totally don't remember at all.
She was a patient.
I was in lockdown. I was there for like 19, 20
days.
We took
all the gifts to the lockdown.
The entire family came, and Charter Oak let us have one of those little rooms.
Wow.
And everybody was in there opening all the presents. So, I mean, it was on the one hand, it was good because like the entire family was like, well, if that's where she is, that's where we're going. So it kind of made me feel loved, but at the same time, I have no recollection of a lot of it because they had me tanked up on so many meds because they were trying to figure out, I mean, they knew what kind of crazy I was, but they were trying to figure out what worked. And I would open a present and go, what did I just do? What is this? Where are we? And then somebody would say something, and then I would start to respond. And then I'd stop talking and say, what did I just say? What are we talking about? I mean, it was like total dislocation. I mean, my brain was completely jacked. So it was good and bad. But I think the couple of years later, the Christmas that my Kindle completely failed, and it was back in the day when Kindles were quite expensive still.
Uh-huh.
My mom and brother and sister clubbed together and sent me an Amazon card that covered not only the Kindle but the case plus some apps and things to go with it.
Oh, right on.
And I was like, yes, because by that point I had become quite reliant on my Kindle. And that was the same year that Bruce's mom gave me her hook drug of the Scotsman.
Oh, yes. The Dewar's Scotch label guy.
It's huge. It's in our bedroom, on our bedroom wall. It covers almost the entire wall.
Oh, wow.
And it goes floor to ceiling almost. And she spent like a year hooking this rug.
Yeah.
So, and I've always admired it. And she had it cleaned and gave it to me that year for Christmas, which was made me cry.
Aw. How about you, Kenny? Recovery Christmas.
Recovery this time or last time?
Pick a time. Pick a time.
Well, this time, last Christmas wasn't all that great. This is only my second Christmas this time around. But previously was the first Christmas that I took my kids and my wife, and we went to Sacramento and spent Christmas with my father, who I hadn't seen in about 12 years. And he hadn't met my kids. My oldest was already 5. My youngest was barely going to be a year old. And I just put them, because I was a truck driver at the time, and I put my kids in the truck, and because I took a job, I took a load to Sacramento for that purpose, and I surprised my father, and I just showed up on his doorstep, not knowing what to expect, but it was amazing because everything, all the bad that was in the past, just melted away. And I developed a new relationship with my father on Christmas because he met my family. He spoiled the hell out of my kids. And we had unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but we had the best relationship a father and son could have for the next 12 years. And
cool.
That was just the beginning of it, and that made it real special.
That's awesome. I think probably one of the best Christmas memories I have in my recovery, which has been a lengthy amount of time, actually, one of them was for sure went down Christmas morning, took Courtney, went down Christmas morning and served breakfast to the homeless. And Courtney's flipping around like she's a little waitress. And she's like 4 or 5 years old. And I remember she looked up at me and she says, so after they have breakfast, is everyone going to go home and open presents? And I'm like, these kids don't get to go open presents. And she was like, I'll bring them a present. We could go home, and I'll open presents. I'll bring one back. And I'm like, well, that's very nice. I'm like, but you know what? Feel good that you're helping these people. And I went with 3 cartons of cigarettes. And what I did is I filled up my jacket pockets with cigarettes. And when someone asked me, because I'd go out on the side and have a smoke, someone said, do you have a smoke? And I'd give them a pack. It didn't take very long before everyone knew
they were all gone.
Everyone knew that I was handing out packs. So they were all collecting the packs. Okay, so to round this out, how about a gift that you were either given or gave that when you look back on it was kind of like, I probably shouldn't have given that gift, or that gift wasn't right for me, or something along those lines.
don't know. I don't know that I remember things that... I don't know that I really... I don't know. I think my favorite part of the gift giving, the whole entire thing, is actually I spend probably 6 to 8 weeks toward the end of the year making things for people. And, I mean, I know that that's not a big deal. It's just a handmade thing. It's not like...
That's the best.
Even better.
I always feel like it's kind of inadequate because I've never had a lot of money to buy a lot of gifts. So I've developed a way to try to figure out every year, okay, what am I going to make this year? And I enjoy doing it, and whether or not the recipient appreciates it is not my business. You know, and once I give a gift to somebody, it's theirs. And I'm not going to tell them how to use it or if they should even like it or anything. My job is done. And I feel pretty good about that. And I don't – that's the part of Christmas that I like, is making stuff for other people and the Christmas Eve service. Because I'm not a big Christmas person in general. I make gifts for people. That's my thing. But the whole highlight of the entire season is the hour and 15 minutes from 11 o'clock to 12:15 on Christmas Eve, the night. The right. Evening candlelight service, that's the whole point of the entire thing for me, is that hour and 15 minutes. So that's it.
How about you, Kenny? Something you either gave or got that just, you know, on retrospect, you're like,
One year I gave my two nephews these lightsaber things at Christmas.
Oh, I can see how that went wrong.
They beat the hell out of each other, and each one of them had at least 10 stitches in their heads.
Oh my gosh.
And my sister and my brother hated me for months afterwards.
That's fantastic. You know what? I've got two.
But they'll remember you forever, trust
me. I've got two. One was from in my getting loaded days. I was probably around 17 or 18. And at Christmas, I gave my brother a bong at the family Christmas.
No way.
And my brother opened it up. You should have seen the look of shock on his face. He's like, my grandmother looks over it. And it was a glass head bong. And it was glass. And it was a fantastic bong. And my grandma looks at it and goes, what a beautiful flower vase. And my brother's like, yeah. And he's looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? And then the other one was when I was married to my ex. I'm thinking about Christmas, and I'm thinking of one of my favorite Christmas songs, White Christmas, and how they all come in out of the snow, and they're wearing these you know, furry big jackets and everything. And I said, you know, my wife needs a big jacket like that, a really nice big. And I got her this, like, it was like a $250 coat, right? We're in Southern California, you know? It's like, I look back and it's this fabulous coat. I don't remember her ever really wearing it, not even once, because, you know, it's like 110 degrees at Christmas time, you know, and it's like, I got this really nice coat. She's like, wow, what a fantastic coat. I've never had a coat before. And never wore it because there was no, we never went anywhere that required this is a coat you would give someone. I mean, big white long coat with fur up around the top. The kind of thing you would wear, like, I don't know, in Chicago.
Or Billings, Montana.
But not in Southern California.
Actually, on that note, I just realized that hours ago, I gave Bruce probably the biggest bonehead present of all time. I went to Walmart to get a couple of things, and because we don't have a lot of money this year, we have negative money this year. Somehow over the years, all of our lights have gotten lost, and you know, we have like nothing to decorate with at the moment, really. But he's a big Christmas person. I'm not so Christmassy. So I decided to get him a pre-present of lights. And since we can't afford a big real tree this year, I bought a little Walmart tree. And he hates plastic trees. He hates fake trees. And I should not have done that. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So the lights are okay.
She got icicle lights and she hates them. Yeah. She hates icicle
but
lights.
He likes icicle lights, and it was his present, so I got him icicle lights. So we may be taking the tree back.
The tree will be fine. You know what? A fake tree will probably not get as much, because I have a feeling a real tree, I think our husky will say, ooh, tree.
Well, that's true. I hadn't thought of that.
Let me take a wee-wee on this tree.
Oh,
I forgot one other thing. Really good thing. So, you know, I've had mattress stores for a long time, which all of a sudden I don't have, but I had them. And we had this bed. And it was this big wooden four-poster bed. And the bottom of the bed was about a foot off the ground. And then you had an 11-inch box on top of that. And then, like, this 20-inch mattress on top of that. So this thing literally came up to your chest.
Oh, I remember this.
And
we had
stairs that went into the bed. And, okay. I mean, I'd bring people over, come and look at my bed, you know.
Yeah, we'd show people our bed because it was that amazing.
And this was when Shelly and I were, like, first together. And I'm sleeping there, and I hear this, Daddy.
Oh, no.
And I look to the side. I don't see anything. Daddy. And then I could see the top of Connor's head, this hair from his head. And I'm like, oh, what? And they're like, Santa was here. And I'm like, oh, shit, it's Christmas. Yeah.
But you couldn't see them. All you could see, because they were so short. All you saw was the top of my son's head. Just bing, 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 bing.
Okay, so for your final words, what is your Christmas wish for everybody?
My Christmas wish for everybody is to stay sober and create no wreckage.
How about you, Kenny?
To have a happy, fulfilling Christmas season spent with friends, family, and nothing but love.
Oh, wow. Those are two really good ones. All I want for Christmas is you. She's saying F words underneath her breath right now.
She must really hate Mariah Carey.
I just hate that song so much.
She hears it and she goes, Mariah, pick a note. Pick a note.
Pick a note, woman. Pick a note.
None of this warbling. So.
I think we should play that song for Shelly.
I think we should not. Because do you know how many times I've heard it today? Just today? Like five. I'm done.
So, Shelly, who's the lead out music by?
I don't know. The Evangenitals?
The Evangenitals. They're fantastic.
We can't use that. We can't use copyright.
Everybody, try and leave it better than you found it, and have a very Merry Christmas.
And take care of you.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.